opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to Cooking Like a Pro. You have found us. Chef Cal and Mrs. Chef Krista is here.
Hello.
And we're just excited that you've found us here on KCNR 1460 AM and also 96.5 FM. And if you'd like to give us a call, I can repeat that number a couple times. It's 530-605-4567. Again, 530-605-4567. And as always, you can type in a question and send it to cookinglikeapropodcast.net. There you go. So there's lots of ways to reach out to us. And it, you know, it doesn't just have to be Wednesdays between 5 and 6. You can always go on there and go to Cooking Like a Pro Podcast anytime. Something's just bugging you over the weekend and you need an answer to it. You feel like you need a, you know, something's happened with dinner and you need a dinner doctor? Yeah, just write it down. I can guarantee you we can take care of that for you here. But anyway, Cooking Like a Pro. And first thing I want to touch on, and this has a lot to do with the, you know, the economy and just the pricing of things. Not so much eggs. We have chickens, but everything else, you know. And when you cook these things yourself, there's a couple things. One is it's generally going to be no more than a third of what you'd pay if you went out and had it in a restaurant, and probably well save you well over 50-60% if something you bought in a store. You know, so when you learn to cook and you spend time cooking, not only are you enjoying yourself and having fun, and for me it's like stress relief. I know, Krista, you like to, well, I don't know. Now we've been together for, you know, 20 years, did you enjoy, how did you view kitchen work in when you were younger? Not like a little girl, but, you know, college and such.
Oh, I was always fascinated with food.
I
always loved cooking. Mm. Like I said, I just couldn't function without a recipe.
Yeah, well, that's, you know, you're smarter than I am. You know, you're more analytical. Is that the word? I just kind of fly by the seat of my pants. I noticed the other day that I season real well when I don't measure.
Just sprinkle, you know, things on.
I've been doing it long enough that when I measure, just, you know, and there's, you know, ways to mitigate, you know, damage. You don't want to slip and too much go, you know, salt goes into something or pepper or whatever the ingredient you're working with. One of the things that I do, and I'm not sure where I went off on a little bit of a tangent here, because I do want to get back to this recipe, but is if I'm pouring a seasoning and I'm looking for a tablespoon or a teaspoon, and I know I'm just not really going to take the time to go find it, and I would, but there's a big difference between a tablespoon that's heaping and a tablespoon that's level. And you generally just don't see those recipes. It just will say a tablespoon, or maybe it's a cup and they're looking at it on an angle. So I don't know. You have to be careful with that, but I'll either dump the seasoning into the lid before I dump it into the soup or stew or whatever I'm making or bread bread I try to keep right on top of it. But the other thing is though, you could also just dump it in your hand. So if something spills in your hand, it still hasn't ruined the soup, right? Oh, you know what? And I forgot we had, you had finally had an opportunity to learn what to do when something is oversalted.
Add potato buds.
Well, what did we do with it? I was making some lentils, and I used a ham broth from a spiral ham. And not really thinking real clearly that obviously that was real high in sodium. So when I just did a general seasoning on it, it became too salty. And what did you do to fix that? Do you remember?
Well, first off, I tried to dilute it. I added a bunch more water to it, mm-hmm. try to balance it out, mm-hmm. and try to, you know, get more of a stock flavor so that it would calm down the saltiness.
Yep.
Now, I did not put sugar. You would think, you know, counter salt with sugar, but that is a no-no.
Yeah.
You want to absorb that salt.
Unless, of course, you want it to end up being, you know, too sweet. I mean, you know, some things, a little sugar works great, you know, if it's spaghetti sauce or something like that. But so then after you made this, after I made the soup wrong, or I made the soup and it was too salty, I showed you how to make, to take some of that salt out of there.
Oh, actually, we did diced potatoes.
Diced potatoes.
You can put potato buds into a creamy soup because they kind of melt.
Yeah. Well, they'll extend it. They'll extend it so that salt gets extended as well.
But because I didn't have a creamy soup, because lentils are chunky, we wanted to add another chunky element that kind of was similar. So, yeah, cook some diced potatoes in there.
Yeah. Threw some diced potatoes in there and just let those cook. And that was something that I was taught. A wee lad in the restaurant business. I mean, I don't know why. It was just something that came out of my apprenticeship, and I'd always remembered it. I've only probably used it, well, less than one handful of times that I can remember. But when I used it, it worked, and it was important that it did. And again, so you just, you know, peel and dice yourself up some russet potatoes or maybe some golden Yukons. So, but, you know, something's going to absorb a lot. Throw them in your soup and just let them cook and simmer. Now you've got some beautiful, and you can remove the potatoes. I mean, you could literally just cut potatoes in half and throw them in there and then just let it simmer for, you know, 45 minutes and then just remove the potatoes. But there's not a whole lot of ways once you've overseasoned, so you do want to be careful with that. But anyway, so my wife had brought home something and was munching on this, and it was a chicken pot pie, right?
Marie Callender's turkey pot pie.
Turkey. Was it turkey or chicken?
Oh, I always get turkey.
Okay, turkey pot pie. Anyway, so I went through and tore the thing apart.
Yeah, I've never seen anybody dissect a pot pie like a frog.
Yeah, well, that's what I did for, especially when it comes to ideation, but even probably more so for, at Black Bear Diner. When you're a corporate chef and you want to analyze something, you have to get to the bottom of what the actual, you know, cost is. For example, is it more, there's two different things. Let's say we're making a milkshake, okay? And this person over here is making a milkshake with vanilla ice cream and chocolate syrup. And this person over here, person B, is making it with chocolate, ice cream, and milk. Those are both going to produce two different things. So the first question to ask is which one tastes the best, right? And we're going to hopefully talk a little bit about taste and how to do that a little bit later in the show. But which one tastes the best? But secondly, you know, the ease of it being made, it has to be consistent. And you do that by really breaking it down. So I broke this pie down, this turkey pot pie, and it was 10, a little, almost 11 ounces in the box, and down to 10 ounces. The box was an ounce. The 10 it was in was an ounce. The cooked weight was a little over 8 ounces, excuse me. So you bought something that was almost 11, and you ate something that was, you know, just a little bit over 8. Almost half of that was just the crust. There were 2 ounces of chicken, 1 ounce of carrots, 2 ounces of sauce, and 1 tablespoon of peas. And when I sat down and figured that out, it was 69 cents to make. And that cost $4. So actually it was $3.95. Plus tax. But anyway, 69 cents. So you can sit there and make these things, get some, you know, your own products, make a bunch of them, get some in, some tins, stuff them with whatever you want, get you all of your grease and your ingredients together rather and your mise en place, make a bunch of these things, freeze them, and literally be spending a dollar on something that would have cost you $4 if you go out and buy it, and probably, I don't know, 11 or 12. Dollars if you went out and purchased it.
Yeah, so it's you're buying when you go someplace, say, you know, Trader Joe's or Winco, wherever, you're paying for the packaging.
Yeah.
You are paying for the transportation. You're paying for the person that made it.
Yeah, and the ease of all that. So again, you can make these things yourself. And if you make these things yourself, just like anything else, and maybe just pick a few things and practice and play with it. But, the pie was delicious, and we'll have to make one ourselves. I don't know. Maybe next week we'll walk through it and we can give you the recipe for that. But anyway, we're going to take our quick break. This is Chef Cal and Mrs. Chef. You found us at KCNR Cooking Like a Pro. Back in just a moment.
Ain't nothing in the world that I like better than bacon and lettuce and homegrown tomatoes. Up in the morning and out in the garden, get your ripe ones, don't get a hard one. Plant them in the spring, eat them in the summer, all winter without them's a culinary bummer.
Now is a great time to prepare for the upcoming wildfire season. REU and city staff are busy clearing vegetation to mitigate wildfire risk to our power lines, facilities, and the community. You can also prepare by trimming back shrubs and tree branches that are closer than 5 feet from your home. Clear debris from your roof and gutter and clear dead vegetation on your property. For information about tree trimming and proximity to power lines, call 530-224-4356. Please remember, we all need to work together to prevent wildfires in our community.
Attention contractors and payroll professionals. Are you ready to master prevailing wage and certified payroll? Join O2 Employment Services on April 4th for expert training that keeps you compliant. Prevailing wage, certified payroll, compliance made simple. Contractors and payroll professionals. Sign up today at O2ES.com. Join O2 Employment Services on April 4th for expert training that keeps you compliant. Prevailing wage, certified payroll, compliance made simple. Sign up today at O2ES.com.
Hi friends, RC here with Tobacco and Brew, bringing you this month's Cigar of the Humidor, Henry Clay Warhawk Rebellious. Backed by popular demand, this limited edition Toro is sure to please. Another fine example of Nicaraguan tobacco blended by AJ Fernandez. Complex, smooth, chocolatey Habano wrapper, a satisfying smoke with a clean finish. Get yours today at Tobacco and Brew, Redding, California.
At Cornerstone Community Bank, you're more than just a customer. You're our friends, neighbors, the local businesses where we shop, and the restaurants where we dine. Your success strengthens our community. Come meet our amazing teams in Redding, Red Bluff, and our newest location in Anderson, and find out why we are more than banking. Cornerstone Community Bank, member FDIC and equal housing lender.
Oh, this is the night, it's a beautiful night, and we call it a Mellanothen.
Welcome back to Cooking Like a Pro here at KCNR. And, oh boy, you know, you listen to that music from the story lady in a tramp, but it's just, you know, with that accordion, and it takes me back to Italy, right back to Italy. And if you want to go to Italy and basically skip the trip and still enjoy those foods, those flavors, go down to Charlu's. And I like to just, take a quick moment to personally thank, Charlu and Kathy and the whole gang down there for sponsoring Cooking Like a Pro podcast. Charlu's located in the Shasta Gateway Shopping Center just south of town, and really one of the very few family run restaurants left in the area. Open 7 days a week and serving lunch and dinner. And they also have a lot of special things there, but just, delicious pastas and homemade pizza and all kinds of, you know, authentic Italian creamy gelato. And they got this bouncy house now, the Charlu's Adventure Room. You need to go down there and try that, as well as their beer wall and a variety of other things, and start off by, you know, signing up for their rewards program. Makes, you know, save some money. We're always looking to save some money. So tell them Chef Cal and Mrs. Chef personally sent you. And speaking of trying foods and tasting foods, one of the things that I'm fascinated by, this subject, and obviously because I'm a chef and this is what I do is a big part of that, but it's also very interesting. And I think that because of, my wife, you know, Krista here, you know, marrying a chef, I think, and with her, you know, education and degrees and stuff, she's more studious. She looks at things from a more rational, needs to make sense thing, where I fly by the seat of my pants sometimes. And I think that the learning how to taste is just a fascinating area. You know, knowing that you can taste sweet or bitter or salty or sour or a umami or any of these things. And when you start doing that, I think that's when you really start enjoying your meals more.
Well, if you try different things next to each other and start trying to pick things out that you've never thought of picking out before.
Yeah.
Like when you, wine tasting, I never really drank wine mm-hmm. before I met you. I mean, a glass here and there, but I had no clue anything about it. But what we do is we take one varietal, mm-hmm. you know, let's say Pinot Noir, and just try a bunch of different ones and learn how to pick out the characteristics across that particular one. And I think even if you went with a bunch of, you know, sometimes kids, you take and have them try chocolate milk. Some kids can pull out all different flavors out of every single different chocolate milk, and they can tell you which brand it is. So maybe even doing a tomato sauce tasting.
Yeah.
You can do things like that.
And I think a lot of that has to do with people's interest in, you know, enjoying it more because they're studying more about it and they're learning more about it. And it's like you mentioned wine tasting and all the fun times we've had over the years with just numerous groups of people being able to have everybody bring a different type of, well, we used to do where everybody would bring a varietal. So when you talk about a varietal, you're talking about the variety of that grape. And so you're talking about a Chardonnay or a Cab or a Pinot or a you know, a Chenin Blanc, a Gewurztraminer, a Johannesburg Riesling, all those, okay? So there's all these different varietals, these grape varietals, and then they crush those. And if it's, you know, I think it's, it varies, but generally about 80% of it would have to be that particular varietals. Let's say it would have to be 80% Cabernet grape inside that bottle for, say, Cabernet in the bottle. And then the appellation where it came from is, I think, is even a little higher than that. For example, if you want it to be Napa Valley Cabernet, like 90% of the grapes have to come from there. And don't hold me on the numbers, but the point about it is what we did is we would taste wine. People would bring wine, but they'd also bring a food dish. And you'd get to try, first off, you know, maybe, you know, 7 or 8 different types of one varietal and then 7 or 8 different types of food.
And you'll see what compares, what contrasts, what went well and what didn't go well. You know, because you would practice and everybody would bring something different. You know, we didn't have a set menu.
Yeah. Okay, well, calling you on the spot here now. Do you have any that you remember that just really stand out?
That's a long time ago.
Yeah. No, well, for me, it's something like from the food standpoint, it might be strawberries and balsamic. You know, or brie cheese, roasted garlic, and raspberries. I mean, certain just combinations that work well. And like when you get, remember trying, Chenin Blancs and things that would be a little more tropical flavor as far as a wine would go. And then pairing those with something like papaya or preparing them and serving them with pineapple and coconut and just, you know, foods that would be more of a tropical thing. But in order to be able to do that, you first kind of have to be able to pick out, you know, the flavors of that food.
Ooh, I think I remember one. There was a pizza, I think, with smoked Gouda and fig on it.
Yeah, that would go well with a lot of different
wines. So that right there, that was a very strong profile. So let's pick apart that pizza. What if someone brought a smoked Gouda and fig pizza, what things should somebody be trying to pick up out of that?
I'd go with a heavier wine because the challenge with smoke is it's not a very desirable flavor in just about any food. Other than foods that have literally been smoked. I mean, like barbecues. But it's kind of an off flavor most of the time. And remember when you're matching food and wines, you want to match, things are either in a similar flavor, versus a contrast, the opposite. Contrast might be, a spicier wine with maybe a sweet peach flavor, you know, peach pie being served with it, something like that. But, you know, with the cheese is almost always have to go with a high tannin wine. If you remember, cheese coats your tongue, you know, which is the first thing it does. And then once it coats your tongue, something's got to break through there. And generally that's going to be, you know, high acid or maybe high tannin. And large Cabernets, you know, Cabernets that are, you know, the higher end, grown from older vines and lusher growing regions in the world, you know, we'll tend to have more tannin. And tannin allows the wine to last longer. So, but looking to match up that tannin, the fig, I think it had blue cheese. Blue cheese is always great with Cabernet. And fig is just really earthy. You know, Cabernet has that, I don't want to call it a vineyard flavor, but it's more of, they'll generally have kind of an earthier flavor. So I'd go with a kind of a higher end cab on something like that.
So how would you experience that? How would you pick apart the pizza? Like you picked apart the chicken pot pie earlier today. How would you pick apart that pizza and pull out the flavors so that things weren't overwhelming so that you would enjoy it? Because that's what we're talking about, is developing your palate so you can enjoy food more instead of just, you know, coming up to a pizza joint, grab a piece of pizza and just, you know, eating it, you know, pulling out the flavor. So how would you do that? How would you detect
that? Well, let's look at it this way. So we're taking this this pizza, and it's going to have a listed blue cheese and figs on there. Balsamic is always a great flavor to go with these things. And one thing that balsamic is, of course, it's a vinegar, so it's going to cut through and help marry that blue cheese together. Again, that fig has, it's kind of an earthy, flavor to it, a little bit of spice. You're going to, when, if you get a really nice fig, especially if it's dried, if it's concentrated, you know.
And quite a bit of sweetness too.
Yeah, you're going to have sweetness as well. So, you know, there's a variety of things, but, you know, you look at that and you say, well, I don't have anything, salty. Okay, well then maybe you're going to add some capers to it or so. So you think about what might be missing and whether you'd want to add that. You know, you don't really, have anything sour, but then the vinegar would bring in that sour component. You know, so you got umami because of the cheese, which is giving it that more satisfied, you know, flavor. And then you got some spice. So, you know, you just wouldn't want to, for example, if you had something sweet already on there, you wouldn't add anything else sweet. Because then they're fighting against, the flavors are fighting against each other.
Well, the balsamic, if it's a reduced balsamic, it's going to have some sweetness to it. But also, interestingly, with acidity, it also can act as a saltiness factor sometimes.
Yeah. I mean, again, I think that picking out the flavors is really what's important. And I think trying a lot of things, try things multiple times. Basically, you're practicing. Like we used to practice this with wine all the time. I mean, I practiced it for decades, obviously making clam chowder till I got to a point where I make it now and I don't need to taste it. I know what it tastes like. I mean, I taste it anyway, just because I do. But, you know, you know, when you repeat something, you get used to those different flavor profiles as well.
Well, I think paying attention to, if you like something, try and figure out why you like it. If you don't like something, why don't you like it? Mm-hmm. And what could you do to change it to make it so you like it again?
Yeah. Well, and I think, you know, well, we kind of hit on this, but pay attention to it. You know, pay attention, think about what does this taste like. And even before you taste it, remember, before you ever taste something, you're going to smell it. Unless, of course, it doesn't have an aroma. First, you're going to see it, right? And then you're going to smell it. And then you're going to be aware of its texture. And the last thing you do is literally put it in your mouth and taste it. So, but study it through that whole process. Pay attention to that flavor. Smell it when you first take it. And then enjoy yourself. And also, what did Thomas Keller say? You had read it once that after, three bites, you really don't taste anything new anyway.
Yeah, you're starting to have,
especially if it's American pizza.
Yeah, flavor fatigue.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Speaking of, let's tear something else apart. Yesterday, so we're post St. Patrick's Day at this point.
Uh-huh.
And we had a bunch of eggs and we had some leftover, corned beef.
Mm-hmm.
And you diced up the corned beef and you were going to put it into scrambled eggs. Immediately, I was turned off. Because I'm not a huge corned beef fan and I'm not a huge eggs fan. And so you're taking two things that I did not really care for. You
well, it's making it for me.
Yes. But I obliged, and having the corned beef in the eggs, which you had also put the hollandaise over the top of it, mm-hmm. I was actually surprised. I had to move past first my visual cues, because I'm like, this is two things that I really don't want to eat, but I'm just going to trust it and go with it. Yeah. But I pulled out that, you know, you've got the saltiness from that corned beef.
Mm-hmm.
You've got, you know, kind of the plainness from the eggs, so that helped balance that, and you put that nice creamy sauce over the top.
And I think that's the idea. You know, it's coming up with the, you know, again, flavor profiles, understanding what they are, not having three things that are salty in the same dish, and understanding that that's going to be too salty. And I think a lot of this for me, you know, I really have to give credit for my dad. I mean, my mom helped me so much when I first started cooking, but dad added a lot of food, but dad added a sense of frugalness. Because he understood the value of everything. That's why, you know, we were always hunting and fishing and gathering eggs and whatever it was, because we understand that frugalness. And a lot of that frugalness, you know, a lot of things get drawn from that, and utilizing leftovers is one of them. So we're going to go ahead and take a quick break. And thanks, Dad, if you're listening, for teaching me how to use leftovers. I'm sure Mom did that too. Chef Cal, Mrs. Chef, cooking like a pro. And KCNR, back in just a moment.
When the moon hits your eye like a big pizza pie, that's amore. When the world seems to shine like you've had too much wine, that's amore.
Get ready to explore the expansive universe of aviation and cutting-edge space technology in Turtle Bay's newest exhibition, Mission Aerospace, presented by Dr. Eric and Tiffany Blassingame and produced by Minotaur Mazes, on display at Turtle Bay Museum January 18th through April 20th. This highly interactive maze puzzle is sure to inspire all generations. Mission Aerospace at Turtle Bay Museum is free for members and included with paid admission. Learn more at turtlebay.org.
For over 50 years, House of Realty has provided experienced and effective advice to its real estate clients. Experts in residential, commercial, and investment property, we have the knowledge and tools to assist you with all of your real estate needs. Family owned and operated since 1965, we have been an active part of the Shasta County community for generations. Please call House of Realty today at 241-8300, a reputation for excellence since 1965.
I'm Marilyn.
And I'm Abby, her BFF.
We're in Riverfront Playhouse's production of Ripcord by David Lindsay Abaire, directed by John Welch.
March 7th through the 23rd, join us for this hilarious comedy about feisty elderly women.
Us, who become roommates in a retirement community. See how our comic, playful rivalry leads to a series of funny and unexpected pranks.
Grab your tickets now at RiverfrontPlayhouse.net. Sponsored by this station and these amazing pro-arts businesses.
What is happening in the state of Jefferson? To find out, listen to the Jefferson State of Mind program Sunday mornings at 9 a.m. on KCNR with your hosts Wynn Carpenter and Terry Raposa and Janet Chandler. To catch up on past broadcasts or to listen anytime, go to KCNR1460.com and click on the archive link.
Come out and play. Have you seen the bill? We all have to pay. Time has come for 51 in a Jefferson state of mind.
I got beans, greens, potatoes, tomatoes, lamb, rams, hogs, dogs, chicken, turkeys, rabbits, you name it! God damn it!
Welcome back to Cooking Like a Pro here, KCNR, Chef Cal and Mrs. Chef. And hey, beans, greens, tomatoes, potatoes, yes. Are you wondering what it is that we should be planting? This time of year, what is it that we're supposed to be planting out there this time of year? Because we're getting into it here. You know, we're nearing the spring, session, and you want to, and if you're planting from seeds, you definitely need to be doing that now.
No.
Yeah, yeah, if you want to, yeah, you can go to my dad's garage, my mom and dad's garage, and dad's got just tables of things ready to go out there. So he's real excited about that. But you know, one of the things that, I enjoy so much is, one, we give them eggs, they give us produce. But it's produce that is completely organic. It's produce that nothing has touched it. And it's so obvious, the flavor difference. And one thing Dad always plants a lot of is potatoes. And those potatoes are so much better in quality and flavor, than anything you buy in the store. I mean, most potatoes we buy are probably coming from, you know, thousands of miles away. I don't, I mean.
Well, hopefully from Idaho.
Yeah, well, that's maybe, where my dad's maybe from Idaho. That's not, yeah, that's not thousands of miles, but, mom and dad got friends back in, I want to say Michigan, somewhere back, but they got like 100,000 acres, some crazy amount, and that's what they grow, potatoes. That's a cold weather crop, but now getting ready, especially for, you know, coming into, to spring, especially early spring, fall is kind of, you start getting things ready and then start getting things ready to, you know, start to bud. But almost all of your lettuces, you know, it's a great time to be ready to start off with those lettuces. The thing I like it, is the lettuce isn't a perennial. It's not going to come back, the next year. But if you harvest your vegetables correctly at the right time, you're going to get multiple uses out of that, where it will grow back and you cut it and it'll grow back and you cut it and it'll grow back. And that's really the key. The key is getting as many growth cycles out of, you know, whatever vegetable you're planting.
Well, plus, if you're only going to do a little bit to start with, because you're going to rotate your seeds. Once you plant your first ones, then you should be adding new plants after that, so that you will go all the way through the end of the summer.
Yeah. Well, and you, all that does is when you till it under is make your soil great. My grandma and grandpa, they both passed on, but their wedding anniversary was this past St. Patrick's Day on the 17th. We're in the middle of March here, since I'm dating the program. But anyway, they had planted a garden for so many years that I think you could just, you know, throw an apple core out there and be picking apples in 3 years. It was just, but the soil gets so much richer with all those things. But again, you're right. All of your lettuces, meaning your romaine and your spinach and all of your head lettuces, you know, butter lettuce, iceberg, of course, a lot of different things that are out there. Your cabbages, it's a good time to start your cabbages too. They're going to take a little bit longer, but, you know, and when I talk about cabbage family, I mean, start growing your radishes, which grow fairly quickly, your beets, of course, broccoli and cabbage. All of your sulfuric stuff should be things that are going out in early spring coming up here. And how are you with greens? Much of a green person? Mustard green, just Swiss chard. We ate so much greens, and they all have that bittery, peppery kind of flavor to them.
What's interesting is you and I both grew up in the same area. No, we did not eat greens. Greens, yeah, I consider something from the South.
Swiss chard, mustard.
Well, they are,
greens.
They can be bitter. Like, yeah. Mustard tastes like, yeah, mustard, and I do not like that. Yeah. Now, rainbow chard, that's a nice green.
Yeah,
depends on the green.
Chard, red chard, a lot of different. Yeah, but they're sturdy and extremely fibrous. You're not gonna have any problem with fiber if you're eating your greens. But a good time for onions and anything that's gonna sprout. Some things under the ground too. You can do root vegetables. Your carrots. I already mentioned beets, but turnips and celery and things like squash. That's a great thing to squash it because it just goes nuts. I mean, but the thing about squash is it's one of those things that grows so fast. I would say green beans fall in this category, that you need to pick them when they're just perfectly tender. Because most things, they get to that peak part of their season, then it starts going back downhill from there.
Yeah, because the later in the season, the fruit that comes off of it isn't as bright.
Exactly.
Tender. It gets more old, woody tasting.
Yeah, I almost always you'll get something that becomes more woody, becomes almost more fibrous, you know, but zucchini and any variety of squash, patty pans, one of my favorites. I don't, you know, most of the nutritional values in the outside, in the skin of almost all vegetables. With potatoes, I think it's 90% or something of the nutritional value of a potato, because, you know, it's pretty much starch. But things like even eggplant, things like that, you really just don't want them to get too big. You want to get them when you want their flavor to be developed. I mean, you want the tomato to taste like a tomato. You know, you want that strawberry to taste like a strawberry. And again, remember, they have these identifying tags. You'll see them on almost anything. Learning how to read food tags is a really good practice, and it's a great practice to teach your children, because very few people look at those things. More and more now, especially because You know, I think you get more organic foods coming out now just simply because people are, you know, realizing that, you know, the pesticides are going into us that, you know, are causing all kinds of, you know, trouble. But yeah, you want to eat foods that are just true and natural and have all those flavors that, you know, God decided them to have.
I think this year I'm not going to plant.
No?
I think this year should be the year to focus on the farmer's market and supporting the local community and those that really know what they're doing and get some really good produce. Because yeah. I spend so much time and money on water and soil, and then we get hit with 110, 120 degree heat, and I'm like,
yeah.
Why? I could have just gone to the farmer's market and spent way less money.
How about if we just pick one thing? One thing. One vegetable, one fruit. Okay, that's it. One vegetable, one fruit. And because I already know what fruit I want.
Well, it's not tomatoes, because I kill tomatoes.
Well, yeah.
And so the deer.
We do get a lot of, well, yeah, the deer probably get more tomatoes than we do. But I was thinking strawberries, you know.
I have not ever grown strawberries.
Yeah, I think strawberries, just because, you know, well, we have, you know, some acreage, so we have plenty, you know, room to grow whatever we want. But the reality is, you know, something you can take care of. And the thing about strawberry is they have that, what do they call that? Like that umbrella, canopy. In grape growing, they call it the canopy. The, umbrella area, the leaves that protected the fruit from the harshness of the temperature, whether hot or whether cold. And plus you don't know if we're going to get another freeze. I mean, it was, you know, 32 last week one day.
No, last night. Actually, no, the night before. Yeah. No, we froze. Yeah. Hard froze.
So, you know, but, you know, so bear that in mind. Don't get them out there until you're pretty sure it's not going to be a frost. Redding up here and Redding far northern California at the very end of the, way up there at the end of what I would call the, you know, the San Joaquin Valley.
We are the true Northern California.
Yeah. Yeah. You said Northern California, people think you're talking about Bakersfield. If you ask them, like in Los Angeles, they'll say Bakersfield.
But if you want to do strawberries, we were walking through Costco the other day and they had some gorgeous, huge strawberry plants. I'm like, maybe we should do it.
Well, how about things that are easy to move in? You know, cause I think about the different, if you get the right climate where you could do microgreens. Or you could do radish sprouts.
That's what I want to do. I want to do microgreens
stuff. Cause then, you know, you're not, you know, we go from fair cold, not extremely cold, but we can go, you know, it's not, we're not, you know, North Dakota. But we do get extremely hot. You know, we're in an area that easily gets into the mid teens, you know, usually 117. I think we actually had 119 last year.
We had a new record.
That was a new record. But we can easily spend several weeks, as in, you know, close to a couple months, if not more, periodically, without it going under 100 degrees.
Yeah, easily.
Yeah, when it's 90 at nighttime, you know. So, but anyway. Yeah,
definitely we keep everything inside.
Figure
right
out
now
what it is that you want to grow. Get it ready. Google. You know, all these items that I've been talking about are all items that work well here in the North State. You know, all of your melons. You know, get your melons. But getting back to, so I can finish up on the squash. You know, get those things when they're small. Get them when they're tender. You pick them so they're going to grow back. You're going to get more. You got plenty of blossoms. Allow those things to get to a size where you're really enjoying everything that nature had to give those. Beans are also a good one, you know, but the problem with beans is so many times people, especially long string beans, they'll wait till they get too old, and then they're just, I always use the term woody.
Chewy.
Yeah.
Woody, stringy.
Yeah. And you don't want that to happen. So again, there's a variety of things out there. Once, you know, we know we're not going to get a frost, make sure you get a good soil mix. That's always important. You know, make sure you get a mixture of a variety of different soils to protect it. And also manage the plants, because managing plants, especially if you're not using, pesticides, you really need, you know, certain aphids there. There may be things you have to add to your garden to protect it from the natural elements.
I'll let you take care of the garden this year.
I'm out. I just said strawberries. Yeah.
Okay, I'll try strawberries. Strawberries and microgreens. Okay, that's my thing this year. Strawberries and microgreens.
Microgreens would be
easy.
We'll
see if I can do it.
But I don't know. I am a squash person, and we didn't mention lettuce. Some of the things you have to be a little more careful with them, but some things will allow you, especially if you're going to go with root vegetables, you know, things underground, carrots, beets, turnips, you know, that kind of stuff. But anyway, hey, the season's coming up. You know, think about it. Go on Google. We never used to have that. Say, Google, I live in Redding, California. What should I plant? What would be the easiest thing for me to plant and not kill because my thumbs are not green? How about that? All right. We're going to go ahead and take a break here. Second to last break. Or actually, the last break we'll be here for. And anyway, Cooking Like a Pro, KNCR. We will be back in just a moment.
Do you come alive in the great outdoors? Do you love to hunt, fish, or cruise the lake every chance you get? See it all at the Redding Sportsman's Expo April 5th and 6th at the Redding Civic Auditorium. All you could possibly want or need to gear up for outdoors with over 150 exhibitors. From apparel to hunting, fishing, boating, camping, kayaking, mountain biking, off-road utility equipment, just to name a few. Redding Sportsman's Expo, April 5th and 6th at the Redding Civic Auditorium. Something for the whole family. Eurobungee, the climbing wall. Enjoy the beer garden with a variety of food. Over $10,000 in guaranteed giveaways. $8 admission, $6 for seniors. 12 and under are free. Sunday, we will honor our veterans with free admission all day. Redding Sportsman's Expo, April 5th and 6th. Go to www.reddingsportsmansexpo.com for more information. Presented by Elwood Ranch, Crown Motors, Upstate Hearing, Garage Force, Interstate Batteries, and California Customs.
Good morning, Redding. This is Rick Hughes, host of The Flatline. Heard every Sunday morning on KCNR 96.5 FM at 7 a.m. in the morning. Just want you to know that God has given us two ends, one to think with and one to sit on. And success in life depends on which one you use. It's heads you win and tails you lose. Come join me on The Flatline and learn about God's tremendous problem-solving device. 7 a.m. every Sunday morning, 96.5 FM, KCNR.
Have you ever wanted to unlock your musical potential? Cascade Curations not only has great music, art, and fashion, we also offer fun and exciting music lessons for all ages and skill levels. Whether you dream of playing the piano, guitar, drums, or vocals, our instructors will guide you every step of the way. With flexible scheduling and personalized instruction, you'll be playing your own tunes in no time. Don't just listen to music, create it. Call or text us at 530-255-4855 to book your first lesson. Cascade Curations, where we believe anyone can learn to play their own song.
Nice bikini, set of jeans, above your weight, but a big warm bun and a huge hunk of meat. Cheeseburger in paradise.
Welcome back to Cooking Like a Pro. Hey, and we appreciate you listening. And if food is your thing, and you ever have any questions, give us a call down here. But we're at KCNR, easy enough to find. And you can always go to our website and check it out and find out more than you might. Krista, just my Mrs. Chef Krista here, I'll just have her give you the quick, you know, the 2-minute spiel on why people should go to our website. What can they get when? What can they find there?
I don't need 2 minutes. You can get there quickly because we have high-speed internet.
Hmm.
CulinaryYours.net. You can get our new vegetable guide. Get that as a free download. And then we have the purchasable book. And we have a few ways to use barbecue sauce and a few recipes on there that you can try out.
Yeah, some good stuff. Yeah, CulinaryYours.
.net.
CulinaryYours. You can actually just Google Jeff Cow. That, you know, if you're a type of person likes to just cruise around the internet. But I didn't want to touch on this because, you know, I know that St. Patrick's Day was, you know, a few days ago, but you still may have some leftovers. Matter of fact, I'm pretty sure you probably would. I know that we do, since it's only a couple of days ago, and some different things that you can do with your you know, corned beef and cabbage. Just reinvent it in a different way. I mean, something is strange. Maybe even taking corned beef and chopping up some cabbage and making a, you know, a quesadilla out of it, or maybe something that would make more sense might be, you know, corned beef and cabbage soup. You know, just start off with a maybe a nice stock, a poultry stock or a vegetable stock, and start, you know, dicing up these ingredients. It's going to take no time to cook because you're really bringing it up to temperature because everything's cooked. So you got your diced potatoes in there and your carrots, your cabbage, and, you know, throw in some poultry seasoning, throw in a little salt and pepper, maybe some spice, and some diced up corned beef. Now, corned beef and hash, though, is when I go to a restaurant for breakfast, I judge it by its corned beef and hash.
That's the first thing I think of is corned beef and hash.
Yeah, because, you know, you got the diced up potatoes that go in there. And it's just, you know, but it has to be cut correctly, one. I can't tell you. Probably the biggest problem I've ever had with corned beef and hash is that they just cut it the wrong direction when they cut the corned beef. So it's long and stringy. And it should not be that way. Send it back if it's cut that way.
Cut it across the fibers.
Yep, yep, across grain, and it's going to make it nice and tender. Also, one of my favorite sandwiches, and this is something I have not had in a while, and I need to have one, especially because I just started thinking about this as I was preparing for the show, and that's the Reuben sandwich. I am just a Reuben fanatic. And we used to actually have a sandwich that was similar to that, that was even more off the hook at one of my last restaurants. But the Reuben is just going to have that corned beef, nice thinly. That's one of the few places where you want your corned beef thinly sliced. And then you got your sauerkraut, which is your cabbage element. It's just, you know, cabbage that's been fermented in a brine. And then generally Swiss cheese, and they call it a Russian dressing, but Russian dressing are pretty much identical to what we call Thousand Island.
Mm-hmm.
Rye bread, you know, depending on how rye you'd like your rye bread. They range from, you know, overpowering to almost tasting like wheat bread. So find one that fits. But yeah, a Reuben sandwich, nice grilled sandwich like that. Can't go wrong with that. It's, but the thing about it is you've got, the corned beef is something that's, been brined, right? So when it's been brined, think of it as ham, except it's like ham, but it's from a cow. So it's beef that's been brined. So when you brine these things, it pulls out flavor. It also breaks down connective tissue, making it more tender. When's the last time you had a piece of tough ham? It just almost doesn't exist. You almost have to want to make it tough. But that is one of the things that the brining will certainly help to do, because it just kind of dissolves a little bit of those fibers. It's also going to get a little more of a salty flavor from the brine, but it enhances it. So it's going to make it more tender. The bottom line is, the brining process does two main things. First off, it adds flavor, usually in the form of some sort of saline, some sort of salt solution. So it adds flavor, and the second thing is it makes it more tender. You know, so you can't go wrong.
No, real quick to add to that, you talked about the Russian dressing.
Yeah.
I grew up making Russian dressing very commonly, and we just used a cup of mayonnaise and 3 tablespoons of chili sauce.
There you go.
Super simple.
Yeah, and some people will use ketchup for that, and then any kind of spice you want. Traditionally, when I make Thousand Island, I always will use pickles. And you can, I usually use sweet pickles, one of the few things I use sweet pickle relish in. And then also always, if you want to make authentic, need chopped, diced egg, hard-boiled egg.
Yeah, so you basically start with the Russian and then evolve it into a Thousand Island.
Evolve it into something better. But again, a ton of things that you can do. If you still have cabbage that's, the leaves are big enough, you could wrap them up in that, and basically you're making like a cabbage roll, right? Corned beef and cabbage roll. I would add some cooked rice to your corned beef, cook some rice off, mix it in with your corned beef, shred it with your fingers. You have this mixture, you flavor however it is that you want. There's quite a bit of flavor there, plus quite a bit of sodium. And put it inside a piece of cabbage, roll it up, and boom, there you go. Do you have a particular sauce that you like over your cabbage rolls, hon?
I didn't grow up with cabbage rolls.
You didn't grow up with cabbage rolls?
No.
Oh, my gosh. I hope Mom's not listening. Well, if she is, we're probably going to get some cabbage rolls pretty quick. But normally, we are Italian heritage, so we would always put a red sauce on ours. And I think you can use, you know, a brown sauce, perhaps. I think that a brown sauce would make it almost pretty specifically German. I think you'd really be leaning towards a German, you know, cooking process. They use brown sauce on, you know, schnitzel, and well, if they use the sauce at all on schnitzel.
Well, I think I would lean back to what we've used each time is that hollandaise with the Dijonaise. I would just keep, you know, how many different ways can you take cabbage, corned beef and hollandaise, and how many different ways can you shape it?
Yeah. How about, right. Well, let's say if you still have a chunk, though, that you can slice thin, then you can think of like a French dip. But instead, you're going to use, corned beef. So you have a Reuben dip. Maybe you're dipping it in an au jus or a juice that's made from those drippings. Remember, I got to touch on this. If you're still boiling your corned beef out there, please stop. Well, you don't have to. I'll say please stop. Stop for a variety of reasons that are all for your benefit. Because when you boil these things off, all that flavor, so much of that flavor, I'd say 50% or more of that flavor goes into the broth. There's been a flavor transfer of that. And you don't want that to happen. You want everything to be encased. And I learned this from a test kitchen in time that I spent working with a chain that had a sandwich on there, a Reuben sandwich or a pastrami sandwich. And when you're cooking it, the thing that you really need to do is wrap it. And I cooked this, I cooked some for us just a couple of days ago, and you just wrap it in plastic. So you season your corned beef. It's already been corned. It's already been cured, brined. Wrap it up, season it with your allspice, your little pickling spice, wrap it in plastic.
Commercial grade.
Then wrap it in foil. So plastic's not going to melt, okay? But what's going to do is it's going to hold all that juice in there. And you want to cook this thing for 2 hours. And I had a piece that was around 2 pounds. And you cook it for 2 hours. It can be a bigger piece. But still, cook it for 2 hours in a 325-degree oven, 350-degree oven. But then it's got to rest. So you start with 2 hours, start it in the morning. You start it in the early afternoon. But let it go 2 hours, start where dinner time is. Let's say dinner's 5 o'clock. So you're going to start at 12 o'clock, and you're going to wrap this corned beef up, let it cook for 2 hours, shut the oven off, and leave it in there. Or take it out and put it in a place where it's just going to stay warm, but slowly start to just sit there. And it's going to go another 3 hours. So the 2 hours it took to cook it, then the 3 hours is going to be that time where all of that connective tissue breaks down. And after 3 hours, that's what's going to, if you were to eat the corned beef at 2 hours, it would be tough. Too tough to chew. It'd be like bubble gum. But you allow it to sit and rest. All that activity that's going on with all those enzymes that are naturally in the product moving around are going to take that connective tissue, break it down, and it's just going to be fall apart tender.
Okay. Odd question.
No?
Can you do that with a regular piece of beef, regular roast beef?
Yeah, of course. Of course. You would want to. You would want to, because if you didn't, it's going to be tough, because it didn't get to a temperature to break it down.
But, I mean, as far as the wrapping it,
yes,
you can do exactly the exact same. Would you sear it beforehand?
I would sear it, of course, yeah. Sear it I would season it, then I would sear it. Sear it meaning get a pan hot, not really hold with a whole lot of oil in it, just maybe enough to coat the bottom, and then just put this meat in there and let it basically sear, not char, but just sear, basically just locking in all that natural flavor, and then roll that roast around and let it sear on every possible external spot. And then when you get done with that there, roast it off in the oven. Again, wrapping it in plastic and then foil and letting it will go, the main thing that does, two main things. It does lock in more flavor, but it's not going to shrink as much. And that's really the problem that you have, especially with corned beef and pastrami. So they just shrink so much that, it's hard to get your value out of it. And that's why you don't really see it that much.
I think we need to clarify. We're talking not Ziploc plastic. We're talking commercial grade.
Yeah. Go down to the nearest restaurant store.
Yes, good restaurant store plastic.
Yeah. You should. I mean, that's Well, I, again, that's all I've ever had because I've always been in restaurants. So, you know, go with it. But with, you always want high quality product, whether it's your ingredients or whether it's, your product. But, as always, we really appreciate you, you out there listening to us, and hopefully you're gaining something and we're semi, entertaining as well, but you're also learning some fun things about food. So we appreciate that. And, where else can they find us, huh?
You can find us on Apple Podcasts and Spotify.
Apple and Spotify. Hey, and I don't even know what those are, but if you do, that's where you can find us at Cooking Like a Pro, culinarilyyours.net. There you go. So, but again, appreciate you listening in. Just have a wonderful week. Make it a great day. Remember, let's be kind to folks out there. God bless you folks, and we'll talk to you next week on Cooking Like a Pro.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.